For a satellite of the game, King started out a 5-0 run.
I was wondering why it sounded so.
I was like, why is G-Man so unexcited right now? Well, because we're 2 minutes into the game.
You start the game on a 5-0 run.
Kings win 109-106. Want to remind you, it's 7:04. Hey, listen up. Time to save money at the pump. Text Dave. That's me, Dave. 83835. Text Dave to 83835, and you'll save a quarter a gallon on your second fill-up. That's kind of a big deal, so figure it out, ladies and gentlemen. Kings win, and they have won 3 of 4 on the road. Guys, here's my question from psycho fan Carmichael Dave.
Yes, in the back.
Am I okay? There's a scene in Major League where you had the two, what were they, Japanese construction workers, and they had the subtitles underneath, yeah. and they would just keep commenting throughout, like, these guys are, I'll paraphrase because they said a bad word, these guys are crappy, you know, this team sucks. And then the construction workers, when the Indians started turning around, go, these guys ain't so effing bad. Well, I'm like the construction worker right now going, well, these guys ain't so effing bad. But during the flow of an NBA season, it's 82 games, and inevitably, even the worst teams are going to have mini stretches where they look halfway competent. So are you leaning more towards this is just a stretch of halfway competence with this team, or is there something or things you can put your finger on to say, no, they've won 3 of 4 on the road, and they're really looking good, and there's reason to be optimistic about the future, Katie Christensen?
Optimistic about the future, there always is, because they have I like several of the additions that they made this offseason, because I blogged about it a while ago about locker room guys, and it's one of the most overused kind of phrases in sports. But the addition of Anthony Tolliver, Garrett Temple, even Matt Barnes, which people like to absolutely just kill for multiple reasons, they have made a difference in the locker room and on the floor. Being in those timeouts, hearing the things that they're saying, these are things that I've never heard in my whole time with the Kings. It makes a difference, and there's reasons to be excited about this team.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, like, I think they are still a mediocre team, but flashes of competence. I mean, let's not overlook the fact that Willie Cauley-Stein has been contributing.
Yeah.
And Malachi was not good on Saturday, but he's largely been finding a little slot for himself, I guess, so to speak. I mean, that's huge. And if you want one major positive thing to look forward to that could say, hey, maybe these guys are turning it around to some degree, they've got a friggin' super-duper star. I mean, they've got the dude. Like, that part's covered. That's the toughest part, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, that's, you mentioned Willie Cauley-Stein. And my heart is so broken so many times over Willie that I'm so bruised right now. Mm-hmm. But I look at how he's looked the last few games. There's this old school basketball game. It's still the only basketball game in the history of video games I like, called Double Dribble. It was on original Nintendo.
Jeez.
And when you would press both buttons at the same time and take off for a slam dunk, the animation was so bad that all that would happen is the guy would like jump in the air and then glide sideways towards the basket. And Willie Cauley-Stein looks exactly like that Double Dribble guy. Like, he is like almost every move, he grabs it and then just glides in the air, it seems, sideways towards the basket to do something, even though he's actually showed a teensy bit of mid-range game. You're seeing an aggressive Willie. You're seeing a Willie who's much like we saw last year, almost exactly like we saw last year, has these games that are tantalizingly they make you optimistic about him. Mm-hmm. And against Charlotte, the guy had 13 points in 14 minutes on 6 of 7 shooting. That's about as good as you can do. And it makes you go, oh my God, should this guy be starting now? I don't want to get too all in, Katie, on Willie, but damn, he's looked like he's woken up the last few games.
Yeah, no, I mean, here's the thing. Oh God, Dave, so much to respond
Stop
to
sighing.
What you just said. Okay, let me just break a few things down with Willie. I talked to him at length the other day
Go ahead.
You're a moron. I talked to him at length the other day just about kind of getting more playing time and how he feels and the thought process behind everything right now. Because it's difficult when you haven't seen the court to come in and feel 100% comfortable contributing, right? But he has gradually just gotten more and more aggressive. And when I talked to him several days ago, he's like, that's what I need to do. He's like, I'm looking to be more aggressive offensively. He goes, I know when I come in that they're bringing me in for DeMarcus and we're missing a ton of offense, but they also obviously want my defense. So he's like, I just need to continue to be aggressive offensively and look to kind of make up a little bit of the gap of DeMarcus being out with scoring. But this is someone who I don't think people know and understand. After games, he goes and gets up 500 shots. He does two workouts before games. He goes in and works on off days. He has been putting in the time, and that's why someone that has been sitting on the bench can step in and play 20-plus minutes and look like he's completely in shape. He's been working and staying ready for the opportunity, so you have to give him credit for that. But when you talk about playing him, like, should he be starting? Should he be playing alongside DeMarcus? I mean, maybe. But I actually think that him coming in with Ty and being that different player than DeMarcus, because he gets up and down the floor, he runs, he's agile. This is not what DeMarcus does. The game is slower with DeMarcus in it. I think he's really good with Ty in that second unit.
Well, and this is... he's now played in 40 games this season. Willie has in particular. He's averaging about 12 minutes a night. He's starting to get comfortable in the system. I think that's the most important part, and that's why we're starting to see that. And it's not like we're asking him to be an all-star for crying out loud. But I think of, and, you know, Portland struggled plenty this year, but I think of what they do with their bigs, and, you know, how they're able to have guys like, you know, Plumlee's and Myers Leonard and stuff like that, that are basically, they set screens, they run to the rim, and they protect the paint. And I think that Willie Cauley-Stein could do that as well, if not better, as any of those guys in Portland. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's not going to require the ball a ton. Like, it's just all right there for being a, you know, for getting good. Whatever. I'm happy. Thanks. Appreciate it.
One of the things that does give me optimism is I don't think that it's a coincidence to me, if I'm looking at why this team has looked better as of late. Willie Cauley-Stein and Malachi Richardson have gotten some minutes, and I think it's nice to see the Youngs get in the game. I think that's a big deal, and I think it's a big deal for Dave Yeager to allow that to happen. I think Ty Lawson is really playing the best basketball he's played in a long time. It's not all perfect, but God, he's a little squirt through the lane. You just can't catch the guy, and he and Collison give you that speed. And then for me, the low-key MVP of that game against Charlotte was Anthony Tolliver, who has found his outside stroke. And if he can continue to do that, and
He's got one job.
That's it. And part of the reason I think he's found that outside stroke, Katie, and you saw it in Indiana, is that this team is beginning to swing the ball and space correctly and spread out. He's getting open looks. And against Indiana, they did that for three and a half quarters, and then towards the end of the game. Yeah. And I think this is part of his learning process, and I think it's fair to point this out. DeMarcus Cousins was garbage the last part of the fourth quarter against Indiana. I think DeMarcus Cousins, as much as he put them in a position to win for the first 3.5 quarters, he slowed the game down on the block. He's open to that backdoor double team. The guards come across and strip him of the ball almost every freaking game. And Katie, I think DeMarcus is learning, and he said to you in the interview after the Charlotte game that the ISO game is off the table now.
Well, the difference between the Cleveland game and the Indiana game was DeMarcus didn't have a great game in Cleveland, but he shared the ball really well, and he kept it moving. And that's why Aaron Aflalo was open to hit that shot, because they passed the ball. And when you look at DeMarcus, we talk so much about him as a scorer and him as a passer, but he's a great diverter of the defense.
Yes.
Anthony Toller played well against Charlotte without DeMarcus even having to touch the ball, just because he was calling for it. He was getting swings. He got that backdoor cut to the rim. That's why.
We'll take a break in 4 minutes, four down territory, where, amongst other things, we'll tell you about a football team that's letting their fans call the plays. No, really, they are. We'll give you the details next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.
Are you okay with the 2 weeks between games, or is the hype way too much?
It's too much. I understand it, and from a game point of view, I think the trade-off between having teams fresh and ready and a little more healed up, it outweighs the rusty factor because they're both going to be rusty. But for me as a fan, honestly, I wish the Super Bowl was yesterday. I wish the Super Bowl was yesterday. And you know what? With all the things going on in the country, I think we can all agree on one thing and one thing only. If you want to do something good for the country, can we get Monday as a holiday? Can we get the Monday after Super Bowl as a holiday? That would just pass, I think, with flying colors.
Just in general, maybe 4-day work weeks.
Yes, that's fine, too. I don't know, Katie. 2 weeks is way too much for me, as we're off to cover the final week.
I know it's difficult to have it be 2 weeks, but I think I kind of go on the side where you look at yesterday, the Patriots had every single person healthy and available for practice. I would rather see a Super Bowl where you have the two best teams in the league that have fought to get to this point. I want to see them competing when they're at their healthiest. So for me, it's like, yeah, it's a long stretch for us that are covering it, but I would rather see the healthy teams playing, Nate.
Yeah, that's where I sit with this, too. I want both the teams to get healthy. And frankly, I'm all right with a week off from the NFL. You know what it means? It means NBA basketball on free TV on Sundays. I'm all right with that.
I'm afraid to ask, but second down? Second down.
All right, that sounds about right. So, John Lynch?
Yeah, Katie, John Lynch.
John Lynch?
That's all that really needs to be said. What the hell?
I'm like, what?
Yeah, John Lynch.
You know, Matt, I feel so bad for you. You are like straight up Ron Burgundy. You just, I feel bad. Dave really does this to you. We talked about this earlier in the show, you guys. I'm still really trying to wrap my head around how they came to this decision. And Nate made a really excellent point like earlier in the show. Nobody had any indication that this was going to happen. There was like 9 different candidates that were interviewed for this job. This name never once came up. I am completely just thrown off guard by this, and I think they're making a horrible mistake.
Yeah, I mean,
we could be wrong.
Shows you that they can keep some things in-house, which is interesting. What's left to say about this? He might end up being a good GM, and I hope he is, but this is such a huge project. I don't understand how you could, in your right mind, entrust it to someone that's never done it before.
I don't either. I part of me doesn't want to get too breathless over this just because, look, John Lynch isn't an idiot, and much stranger things have happened. But it's just so typical of the 49ers that they want to get back in the game with one swing. And I think the sooner teams that are bad understand that the reason the wheel is for a reason. You don't need to reinvent it. Mm-hmm. You're bad because you keep – let me put it this way. The 49ers and teams like them, they're the poker players that have 7, 8, 9, 10, 2, and they're waiting for the flop and pushing their chips all in constantly because they know one of these days they're going to get that one card that gives them the straight. they're taking these unnecessary gambles because they don't want to, you know, do the right thing and build correctly. And I don't know, follow a pattern that's proven to be successful. They want to be the ones that do it the new way.
A fellow by the name of Matt Miller, he's the lead draft writer for Bleacher Report. He shared some texts that he got from some NFL people last night once this news came through. Quote, just what they need, another safety who can't cover. Dumb as F. Third, Jed must want to go 0-16 for Rosen, talking about the UCLA quarterback.
Yeah.
You interview 3 media guys and wonder why no real football people want your job. And finally, the Browns are laughing at the 49ers right now.
Very, very true. All right, fourth down. Mm-hmm.
The Salt Lake Screaming Eagles of the IFL are allowing fans to vote on which plays to call. Fun idea or just stupid?
This is bad, but it's minor league promotion stuff. So, yes. I mean, who really cares? But this is, yeah, the Salt Lake Screaming Eagles. They've got an app now. And apparently you can pay for levels of whatever, control over the team. The fans voted for their coach. They voted on the team mascot, and now they're going to be able to choose plays.
I agree with you, Nate. It is minor league promotion, and that's kind of fun. Now, obviously, if this was the NFL or something, it'd make the John Lynch hire look smart and prescient. This, this though, I get. The team says about 38,000 people used the voting app when their coach was picked over a three-week period in August, and fans can pay prices ranging from $10 to $40 per month for different levels of engagement. They're not allowed to participate in hurry-up offenses, but the IFL uses a 25-second play clock. So, yeah, fans will have about 10 seconds to vote. And then how about the coach having to get the plays into the quarterback in time? That's going to be fun. I'll tell you what, if they put one of the games on TV and let you follow along, I'd watch at least one episode. Notice I don't say game, episode of sports. Yeah, Katie, it's weird.
I think this is like kind of the minor league version of I don't know, video gaming technically. So yeah, that's cool. If it ever happened in the NFL, like something is wrong in the world, but you know, they voted their coach in. So the coach can't really be upset when he was voted in to coach the team. And now the voters are going to decide how he runs his offense.
Fourth down.
Dallas Cowboys Radio Network. The Denver Broncos say they could be interested in Tony Romo. What team is the best fit for him?
I think Denver'd actually be a really good fit for him because of the receivers that they have. I think Houston makes a ton of sense if you took Brock Osweiler and that giant contract out of the situation. Again, you've got a situation where you have a good defense in Houston, really a great defense in Houston, and you got DeAndre Hopkins and a few other weapons for him to throw to. So I see both of those teams making sense for those reasons. And the fact that they're both in the AFC. And I think with the Cowboys, if they release him, they're probably going to have a handshake agreement that he's not, as has been mentioned before, he's not signing with any rivals or anything. That makes a ton of sense to me.
I agree with you on in the sense that the Broncos would be a good fit. The Texans would be a good fit just because they're kind of more complete teams and he's more of a veteran. But I'm just going to throw out several names right now of quarterbacks that did not play well this year. And we don't know what's going to happen in terms of the Cowboys, whether or not they're going to release him or if it's going to be some kind of a trade situation. So there's no telling how it could work out. But Carson Palmer, Andy Dalton, Joe Flacco, Ryan Tannehill, Blake Bortles, Marcus Mariota, Kirk Cousins, Ryan Fitzpatrick. There's a ton of quarterbacks that underperformed that did not do well this year. So I think there's a lot of options. It just relies, Nate, on what Jerry Jones decides to do, release him or trade him.
Yeah, I mean, the Texans and the Broncos are the two obvious ones. I'm going to throw two at you that I think are dark horses just to make a bad management decision. The first one, this 10 years ago would be the classic Washington move where they wouldn't want to splurge on Kirk Cousins, and so then they would end up spending a bunch of money on Tony Romo thinking he could get him over the top. And the same would go for Buffalo. Watch out for that, too. For whatever reason, they don't seem to be pleased with Tyrod Taylor, and that seems like the type of silly move they would make as kind of a patch-it-up, band-aid type of maneuver. I don't think either of those are going to happen, but I wanted to just offer.
That's good drama.
Yeah.
We'll be out at Houston later today. We'll be broadcasting live from Radio Row all week long. But don't forget, we'll be returning and right there at Hagen Oaks for the Big Game Golf Tournament this Sunday, noon to 3, Hagen Oaks Golf Course. Actually, the tee off. Seriously, guys, noon to 3. The tee-off's at 8:30 a.m., despite what it says on the paper in front of me. Play with us. The hosts score prizes throughout the course. Jesus Christ. Plus, win autographed sports memorabilia, Kings tickets, Shark tickets, concert tickets, and more.
A lot of things.
Yeah, a lot of things going on. Bobby Jackson will be playing golf out there. It's going to be a blast. And then afterwards, go watch the game as well. So a lot of questions I got over the weekend on social media about is there still room? Where do I sign up? Et cetera, et cetera. I know there's a couple foursomes left, but this thing has been filling up. Go to khdk.com to get all the details. When we get back, we got a full half hour with you and your phone calls. We'll talk mainly about the Kings. I want to rate Jaeger. I want to rate the rest of this road trip and look at their schedule coming up. And before we get to that, though, why Raider fans are really going to be pissed off at Marquette King today. We'll tell you what he did, and you will not believe it next. 3 minutes away on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK. A little jet for you on a Monday morning. Welcome in, Dave, Katie, and Nathan on a getaway day for us. We will be in Houston broadcasting live from Radio Row tomorrow.
Hey.
Tamari, as a matter of fact, will be there throughout the entire week. And we are going to go to the Kings game tomorrow night as they finish out that road trip against Houston. So we'll bring you a sound and all kinds of fun stuff. One of my favorite weeks of the year as far as bringing content to all of you. Want to remind you, in 20 minutes, you get to win a or get a chance at winning a gift card, a $50 gift card, if you will, to Twin Peaks, a fine sports lodge with made-from-scratch comfort food, ice cold beer, and all the best sports. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Real quick, let's pay this off. You have Marquette King, who has a bit of a personality as the Oakland Raiders punter, but in this case, his personality might have pissed a couple of people off here. Over the weekend at the Pro Bowl, he and Aqib Talib of the Broncos reenacted Talib yanking Michael Crabtree's chain off his neck. You may remember that Talib did that to Crabtree in a real game, yanked his chain and held on to it. Well, not only did they reenact that in a photo, but both Talib and Marquette King posted it on their social media accounts. I wonder how Crabtree would feel about seeing one of his teammates and not only reenacting something that I'm sure upset him, but something that it's a Bronco. It's Aqib Talib. He is not liked amongst Raider fans.
Or really amongst anybody.
That's a great point right there. Just kind of a tone-deaf move by Marquette King, who's been doing that a little bit.
Got to do it for the likes, dude. So, I mean, that's what happens. You know it as well as anybody, Dave. Like, there is nothing that gets someone's head further up their own ass than being on Twitter and getting a lot of likes and having a ton of followers.
Hey, now.
No, I mean, we're all guilty of that. You throw something out there and someone smash that like button. Before you know it, you're mentions are blowing up, and it's like, oh man, like maybe there's something to this. Maybe I should do more like this. You can't help it. And Marquette King is so good at social media. Like, this is what happens.
Some people are just stupid.
Well, there's that.
I prefer to think some
most
people are just stupid.
Most people are stupid, including me. I mean, I put myself in that category. It's especially as Nate said with social media, it's a loaded gun. It really is. you get to decide whether or not to load that thing up with bullets and, I don't know.
Weird move. Whatever.
Jerry.
I'd pay money to watch Marquette King and Michael Crabtree
go
duke
at
it out.
Let's see it, fellas. Let's do it for charity. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, good morning, guys. Long time no talk here.
Yeah, buddy. Missed you.
Yeah, missed you guys, too. Wanted to touch on a number of things. Start with the NFL before I get to the Kings. Thank you, Dallas fan. Thank you, Raider fan. You guys put my girls through summer camp this year. I knew Dallas would fold underneath the big lights, but that is an up-and-coming team, same as Oakland. But I knew that they would crumble in the playoffs, but I also knew that their fans are so crazy loyal, they would lay down bets. Thanks again, my girls. Thank you.
Love it.
The All-Star Games, Pro Bowl, Skills Challenge, NBA, baseball, unwatchable. All of them, unwatchable. And is DeMarcus an all-star? You know what? Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But you know what? Why don't we just make him a Hall of Famer? He's done so much for the Kings since he's been here. I do know how the Kings are going to make the playoffs, though. The NBA is going to expand the playoffs to include everyone. The Kings will make the playoffs starting in 2020. And, you know, I guess that's about all I have. You guys love KHDK, love CBS.
Thanks, Jerry.
Hey,
how about that? That's an idea. I've got
what was the last one?
I think he said Vivek's going to buy his way into the playoffs.
Yeah, and they say he loves us.
Hmm.
Yeah. Can we talk about the NBA All-Star situation for a second?
Before we do, I want to address his first point real quick about Dallas. And he was referring to the fact, I'm sure he put money on the games, and he predicted Dallas would choke under the lights.
Three-time NBA title belt holder, Mavericks. You're talking about the Cowboys.
I'm just saying, before the Cowboys lost to the Giants, lower level 50-yard line seats to the Super Bowl on the NFC side of the stadium, we're going for $13,500.
You mean the Packers?
I'm saying, huh?
Before they
lost to the Giants, right?
No, I'm sorry. They lost to the Packers. Yeah. The Packers.
Okay, so you're talking about actual playoffs.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. So did I say Giants? Uh-huh. I'm sorry.
Yep.
Before the Cowboys lost to the Packers 2 weeks ago, and you know why I said it? Because I'm reading a dumbass Darren Revelle tweet word for word like an idiot. I should have known better. Lower level 50-yard line seats on the NFC side of the stadium, $13,500. As of now, that same exact seat is going for $5,000.
Wow.
So that, you know. That's
why Jerry gets his way.
Yeah, that is. And say what you want about the Cowboys and anything about them on the field, but God dang, they travel.
Yep.
They really travel.
That's amazing.
Go ahead, though. I'm sorry. We're getting to the NBA.
Well, was it? I forget if it was Friday or Saturday. Maybe it was even Thursday. Who keeps track of days anymore? But Steve Kerr was asked about, he was asked about the All-Star starters and his roster and all that. And someone asked him if he was going to get his four guys out on the floor at the same time. Like, hey, that'd be cool, right? It's basically Warriors versus the Eastern Conference All-Stars. And he said, you know, he'd like to do that, but he's not really sure who the fifth would be. And I just want to throw a name out there because I know the perfect guy that would be the perfect fifth dude to run with those four Warriors. You know who it is, right?
Zaza Pachulia.
Russell Westbrook.
Hell no. Russell Westbrook.
It has to be.
Do this.
It really
does.
Come on,
dude. Do us all a favor, man. Come on. Make that All-Star game watchable. Put Russell Westbrook on the floor with your four guys. Let's see it happen.
Nate, I
have not been this excited for anything NBA since the Kings have been in the playoffs. This has to happen.
Okay.
No chance.
Nate, I wrote a blog about this the other day, about the fact that we were all so concerned about the four games that OKC and the Warriors were going to match up during the regular season and all this stuff. I'm like, but nobody ever thought about the All-Star game. When what the hell is going to happen when the man that does not exist in Russell Westbrook's life is going to be on the same team with him again? Like, seriously, it's... Hey. Kevin Durant is the proverbial freaking tree in the forest to Russell Westbrook. He doesn't exist because he doesn't see it. He doesn't hear it fall. He doesn't hear it win a title. It doesn't happen if he doesn't accept that he even exists in this bit. Dude, because he doesn't hear it fall.
Okay, if Russ gets on the floor with those four guys, one of two things is going to happen. And I'm going to ask you, Dave, you tell me what you think is more likely. He's either going to take every shot and not pass the ball at all, and it's going to be 1-on-5, or he's going to turn totally passive, Kobe against the Suns in the playoffs.
And just not shoot.
And just...
I would go with option A.
He's going to get all of the buckets.
That's a mortal luck. Gordon, you're on KHDK.
Hey, good morning, y'all. How you doing?
Good, buddy.
Hey, I thought the Heath Tlaib and Marquette team thing was kind of funny. I mean, what's going on in the world, you got to kind of take light in some humor nowadays.
Gordon, you're a Raider fan too, aren't you?
No, I'm a Broncos fan.
Okay, exactly, Gordon. That's why you thought it was kind of funny.
I was going to bring up, if I'm John Elway, I don't pull the trigger on Romo because that's bad news. That's $20 million injury price tag that, you know, you're going to be out if he gets one good hit.
But Gordon.
So you like the option you have now better?
I mean, I'm not being snarky,
absolutely,
dude, but it's not your money, and so what do you care? And if they're no, and I'm not being snarky. I'm saying it's not your money. No. If they have the money, do it. And what do you care? Because Trevor Siemian is not taking you to the promised land.
Okay, you work on Trevor Siemian, and you keep Paxton Lynch. Like like John Elway said, he trusts in his young quarterbacks. We don't obviously have the offensive line we did two seasons ago. And unless something comes to fruition in offseason and free agency, that is a huge insurance risk you're going to deal with. I mean, let's face it, if Tony Romo gets hit hard one time, he's out. And it won't be.
Yeah, Gordon, but I don't think you need to worry too much about it because I don't think the Broncos are at all interested unless he's on the open market. And I have a really hard time figuring out how Jerry Jones is just going to let him walk for nothing.
I do, too. That's a little weird to me. I can't imagine they don't get something, even if they agree to pay whatever. If they're going to pay that much money for Tony Romo to play on another team, any part of his guaranteed part of his contract, how are they not going to get a pick or something? That wouldn't be smart by Jerry Jones at all. Not that that's necessarily mutually exclusive. I want to take a right turn here for a second as we continue in this segment. And we'll get to the Kings a ton in the next segment as well. I'm going to play a clip of something that I don't know if we've ever covered here before, but I do think it's something that happened over the weekend. And when we're talking about sports that happened, this might have been the biggest thing to happen overall. Okay, so... There's a lot to break down here. First off, love the call. I absolutely love the call. I even love the – I guess they have a three-person booth because there was a lady in the background when they were appealing the – when they were doing the replay, and she's like, he's got it. And that was right before the review came in as good. I didn't know there was tennis play-by-play, by the way, either. That sounds like a
game. Like on radio?
On radio. Yeah, I didn't know that existed. And I can't imagine – like, imagine listening to an entire tennis match on radio. How the hell do you call that?
You know what? I think it would actually be kind of awesome because you'd obviously hear the back and forth, right?
You'd hear the back and forth.
So you'd hear that, and you'd hear the crowd, so you'd know if there was a stoppage of some sort. I mean, I think you probably could kind of stick to how it is on TV.
But how do you describe what Federer, Nadal, Federer, Nadal, Federer, baseline, Nadal? How do you describe, like, what shot is being hit? Yeah, like, you've got to throw that in there, too. Otherwise,
terrible.
It's 3.5 hours of Federer,
Nadal. Backhand.
Nadal. Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
Roger Federer, for the first time, I think, since 2012, wins Grand Slam title down in Australia. A lot of discussion as to whether or not he's the best ever. Now, listen, I'm not trying to get into deep tennis talk because, gee golly, that's right. That's going to bring the listener. I will say this. When I was a young lad, tennis was a big freaking deal to me and my family, and a lot, it was something we would talk about when it was
when I
was very, very young,
when there were American champions.
I think that's part of it, and that's what I'm asking. Like, McEnroe and Borg was a huge deal, but I was too young for that. Then it was McEnroe and Jimmy Connors, Yvonne Lendl, Michael Chang, Andre Agassi, Pete Sampras. And then on the other side, even Martina Navratilova, Chris Everett, which again I was a little too young for, but then Steffi Graf. It was a big freaking deal, man. Wimbledon was a big deal, and something has happened. And part of it, Nate, I think you're exactly right, are American champions. But I also wonder if the other part of it, too, is that it's too fast. The rackets and the technology, they're so good.
The men's game is
pretty
ridiculous.
No longer the wooden rackets with.
Well, no, I mean, that's an important thing to point out because the women's game is a lot more watchable, and so you see more volleys.
Yes.
That, you know, you don't want to watch guys just get aces over and over again or have two volley, you know, match or game, set, match, whatever the hell it is. I always get them all. But I totally get what you're saying.
I'm trying to think of another sport in which, because there are.
The technology has exceeded, like, the.
No, I'm going to sound assy here, but I'm not trying to be. But I think tennis and maybe gymnastics are the two sports where I think generally the female game is preferred over the male game when it comes to watchability. And I think in both cases, that has a lot to do with the fact that, like you just said, the women's game is still insane. I mean, these ladies, forget about it. They're strong, they're fast, they're quick. But it's still accessible. Mm-hmm. I don't know how accessible the men's tennis game is anymore, Katie, for the average viewer. Because it's just too damn fast.
Well, gosh, Dave, I mean, I've never even really paid much attention to tennis. Like, I think it's kind of crazy you say, like, when you were growing up, maybe you were more into it and paid more attention to it because there was American champions. But, like, I don't know. It's never been something that I've been interested in. And we were on the road in Charlotte, and our producer for our Kings broadcast, he stayed up until 8 o'clock in the morning watching that.
So did I.
Watching the men's finals. Yeah. So, like, I can't speak on, like, the game and how it's changed, because I've never been a fan.
I think it's a generational thing. And I just say that because all the names I named off, that was, I think, for me, and I can see on the text line rolling up too, I think there's a lot of people listening right now. If you're 35 or older, you know, you were around for those battles. Andre Agassi, Pete Sampras, forget McEnroe and Connors. Andre Agassi and
that's,
Pete Sampras.
That's a little more my...
Must watch.
Yeah.
Must see TV. And to go back a little bit further, McEnroe or Jimmy Connors at the U.S. Open. I remember John McEnroe. I didn't care.
Man, Jimmy Connors' wife was amazing, too.
God, Nate, I hate you. You're such a...
it didn't matter
Am I wrong?
What McEnroe was doing. you turned on a John McEnroe match and you knew that he was going to be emotional, he was going to freak out, he was going to yell at the umpires. I mean, he was a total anus, but he was but he was America's anus, and we rooted for him because he was just such a cheese ball, and it was entertainment. And I would like to find when I watched this early Sunday morning, because I stayed up and watched it live. And when I was watching it, I had to go downstairs because I was getting so into it. I was rooting for Federer, nothing against Nate Dahl, but I'm always rooting for the older guy. And it was a tremendous match. And I found myself the whole time going, why am I not more into tennis now? What is the problem here? Because I used to be, Katie.
Well, Dave, I had such a good point, and I totally lost my train of thought.
I really think it is.
It happened. I've lost my mind.
The name power in the American game. I mean, Andy Roddick has been the most, probably the most well-known American tennis player since Sampras and Agassi, and he's most well-known for marrying Brooklyn Decker. And has he ever won a major?
Ah, God, did he win the U.S. Open once? See, this is so sad that we don't even know
right.
that.
Right. I mean,
Go ahead, Nate.
No, you go ahead.
No, I have a question. Because obviously, like, I've never really watched it and followed it, but I know a lot of the names, and like I've watched like documentaries on John McEnroe because he is kind of a polarizing figure in the sport, right?
Yes.
But the crazy thing is, he's polarizing because, like you said, he was an anus, all right?
Yeah.
But what makes him any different than, like, why is it okay in tennis, and why is it something that people can cheer for in tennis when in other sports, like, you know, you have DeMarcus and Draymond Green, like those types of guys in the NBA, and you know what I mean? There's those guys in each like professional sport that, oh, they're volatile, they're a pain in the, you know, butt, like, we don't want them, we don't need them, it's bad. But in an individual sport, especially a sport that is like freaking hoity-toity as tennis, it's okay.
I think that was part of the problem, is that tennis is so hoity-toity, and then you get this brash New York kid with this curly little mini fro coming in, and John McEnroe and that red, white, and blue headband that he'd wear, and he just came in and tore everything up. He was a guy that came in and really literally turned tennis on its ass. And some of those matches between he and Borg, and this is where I don't know if it's so much. I think the American part helped. But then at the same time, I remember watching not just Borg, but Yvonne Lendl, Boris Becker at Wimbledon. I mean, these were still major deals. Steffi Graf on the women's side was must-see tennis, as was Martina Hingis. And we remember the tragedy, or the near tragedy, I guess, technically, when she got stabbed in the back.
Me and Monica Seles.
What did I say? Martina Hingis? Oh, I apologize. Monica Seles. And somebody bring it up on the text line that, you know, no American champions. I guess the two Americans that played in the women's title don't count. It's an interesting point because not only did you have two Americans, you had Venus and Serena Williams. And while that got some coverage, for some reason, the Federer-Nadal match really, I think, eclipsed it, not just worldwide, at least in my mind. Maybe I'm mistaking it. Maybe the Williams sisters match was a bigger deal here. I don't know. I just found myself watching the highlights of that. And then deciding to actually watch Nadal and Federer and really being blown away. We got to go to break. Philip, you're on the drive.
I just wanted to call in and say you guys are saying tennis isn't watchable anymore, but men's tennis is different from back in the day. My father was just like you, saying we don't see volleys enough. It's in the baseline now. You got to give us a chance to go ahead back and forth. You're seeing amazing athletic plays, people like Monfi running 50 feet side to side for about 20 minutes. You've got to accept that the game's changed.
You're saying it's more volleys now? Rallies?
I'm saying you see way less volleys, but rallies are just as long because you have athleticism we haven't seen back in the day.
See, maybe, again, I'm admittedly ignorant, and it sounds like you're a much bigger tennis fan than I. I feel like half the men's game seems like it's 230 billion mile an hour serve, ace, ace, miss, ace, barely return it, slam. I don't see – yesterday I saw a lot of long rallies, and I also expect that it matters where you are too, whereas if you watch the French Open, you're going to see a lot more longer rallies than you will if you're at Wimbledon or somewhere else where the surface is a lot harder.
Like any sport, though, the athleticism is caught up with the technology. You're not going to see that as much, just an ace back and forth. People just can get their racket on it. They're so huge now, it's going to get back in play, and they can have a rally just like you want to see. It's not that fast anymore. maybe like in the, you're thinking of Roddick when he was hitting 150. Not many people are doing that.
Well, I mean, Novak Djokovic isn't exactly slow.
He's not. He's the best defensive player on tour. Well, when he's not going crazy.
All right, we got thank you for the call. We'll take a break. That's Tennis Talk for a Monday. When we get back, let's get in. I had to throw that in there. Let's get into the Sacramento Kings. They got the rest of the road trip going. Other than DeMarcus Cousins, who's been your key to this little mini resurgence? Is it okay to get excited about Willie Cauley-Stein and the elephant in the room as well? We'll cover this. Is the debate over? Are they a better team without Rudy Gay? We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk about that in 4 minutes on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHDK.